PDGs, chief directors, directors, staff of parliament, PNP, staff of the ministry, welcome to a meeting of the Civic Committee on Economic Development, which will be dealing with the energy today. Just in continuation of the annual report, some asked that we didn't have a chance, some of the questions that were answered by members. Continuation of the annual report meeting that we had the last time. We welcome also the DG. I don't know if I'm say welcome back in South Africa or if you change your passport, but welcome DG, and I hope the studies and the exams went well, and one of these days we'll be calling Dr. Nelisa Makubane. Good. honorable members and staff of the departments, I think we know each other so well, but firstly let me apologize for not, we didn't get the political approval, Honorable DG, for attending or coming to visit you in your place in Pretoria. You know, Parliament has got a system that you need approval. We can decide and we want to go and all that, but if you don't get the approval, the chief whip of the NCOP didn't give us that political approval to attend, to have a meeting in Pretoria. So without that approval, we could not move and do anything, but definitely we will, whether it's in our private capacities or what, we will come and visit your facility in Pretoria and share with Mazungu and Nguni about the specials that they've got there for us, which they have promised that they will keep for us. DJ, I don't know if they have informed you about those specials and that, we will then come and enjoy what is there and have a look then at the facilities. I think when we have our next oversight, we will start that in as well. Honourable members, if there is nothing from your side, I think we should then, before we go over to the presentation, if the department has got the answers to the questions that the members have asked, let me also just make apology for some of our members. Honourable Gamede and Honourable Dihali is in Switzerland attending a WTO summit in Switzerland. Honourable Van Lingen is at the BDMS with a political party, so apology for her as well. That's the only three apologies that I've got, or that we've got so far, yeah. So some of the members have indicated that they will be coming. Honourable Aine has said that he will be here, joining us very shortly. Honourable Abrams.
Good morning, Honourable Chairperson. I'd like to be excused at 12:30, please.
Hopefully, Department of Energy, because energy moves fast, you know. Electricity moves fast, petrol burns up fast. Hopefully, it will be finished by 12:30 today. Dr. Barnard, you said it will be done by 12:30. Okay, Dr. Barnard is committing himself. He just got the approval from the DG that they will be done by 12:30. Over to you, DG, over to you and the team.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. My understanding was that what we needed to present today is the issues around the electricity and electrification and nuclear energy. So I will ask Dr. Barnard to just give us an overview on the electricity and clean energy, and while Mr. Jitesh Kesho is going to be presenting on the nuclear energy. And maybe Chairperson, if I can, I'm not sure whether the team has introduced itself, but maybe I can just introduce maybe the people that are unfamiliar with. That is Jitesh Kesho, just because of short Kirsten, please. he is the acting chief director for nuclear energy, and also Mr. Vishangu, who is also from the clean energy side. She's going to be answering all those questions that the honourable members around solar water heating. And then Ms. Ramwedisi, she is responsible for energy planning. So that's where all the planning lies. So we have an integrated energy plan at the top, and then underneath we've got the electricity plan, which is called the IRP. We've got the gas infrastructure plan, and also we've got the liquid fuels master plan that is currently being presented at the portfolio committee on energy. So Chair, and then of course, you know, the usual suspects. So Chair, if I can hand over to Dr. Pam, please.
Thank you, DG Chair, members. Last time we end off with program 3. What is left, as DG indicated, is Anika and Anna. So the first one, if we follow the sequence of the slides, will be nuclear. If you can just come. I don't know if you want to take up your stand here, because it is loaded, and then top run the slide show yourself. The presentation is loaded there. Thank you, Chair.
Presenting to a committee?
Correct.
So don't be nervous, I can see you are quite nervous. Just take it easy, take a deep breath and take it easy.
Sure. Thank you, Chair. The presentation focus on the introduction, the key focus areas which we embarked on in 2011-12, the highlights which we report, the performance against targets that were set for that financial year, as well as the challenges and the way forward conclusion. The nuclear branch, which is now a branch in the Department of Energy since the beginning of this financial year, has several mandates, the main one being the implementation of the nuclear energy policy of 2008, which was promulgated in June 2008, which called for South Africa's position on nuclear power following the Energy White Paper of 1998. The development of nuclear technology, the required regulations in terms of safety and non-proliferation, the minister's obligations in terms of the various acts, such as the NNR Act and the Nuclear Energy Act, both of which are acts of 1999. We are in the process of seeking to amend these acts as part of our reviews and updating of legislation in terms of the environment out there in the world. The radioactive waste management policy implementation, the radioactive waste management policy of 2005, the establishment of the National Radioactive Waste Disposal Institute, that's the Act of 2008, the Radioactive Waste Disposal Institute Act, establishment of the Radioactive Waste Fund, that is currently in drafting process in the form of a bill, and exercise oversight of nuclear organizations such as NEXA. So the department also ensures implementation of the National Nuclear Disaster Management Plan, of which annually there's an exercise, or every 18 months, the decontamination and decommissioning of past strategic facilities which are currently housed at NEXA, the international obligations, such as non-proliferation obligations, the cooperation of nuclear technology with the International Atomic Energy Agency, we refer to peaceful uses in terms of nuclear technology applications in a wide variety of fields such as medicine and agriculture to isotope hydrology, which is management of groundwater resources, and also in nuclear medicine. The coordination of bilateral and multilaterals, as you know, we are members of, we've got bilaterals with many countries such as Algeria, South Korea, the USA for nuclear, to name but a few. And we've also got multilateral agreements such as those with the International Atomic Energy Agency and the Generation 4 Forum for Nuclear Technology. We administer all matters related to non-proliferation as required by national and international agreements, and the department also does make sure that materials and equipment used in the nuclear sector are accounted for and used for the proper purposes only. So the key focus areas for the financial year was the approved nuclear procurement program relative to the integrated resource plan, the cabinet approval of the phased decision-making approach answered this requirement. This phased decision-making approach was adopted in November 2011 together with the establishment of the National Nuclear Energy Executive Coordination Committee also in November 2011. Nuclear fuel cycle infrastructure. We set out to look at what kind of fuel cycle infrastructure we need to support the nuclear new build program, such as that stipulated by the IRP 2010-2030. IRP stands for Integrated Resource Plan. We have completed pre-feasibility studies and placed that future activity on this on a bit of a back burner until we get future progress with the nuclear build to align with the timelines of the build program. The National Radioactive Waste Disposal Institute, we've got an approved business plan and budget plan. I would call it budget plan because we are still awaiting the full funding for establishment of the institute. We've embarked on community outreach for the year. We also sought to standardize security measures at ports of entry, including radiation portal monitors. That is basically to monitor the entrance of, or the exit as well, of sources of radiation through which could be illicit. Amendment of nuclear legislation, I've already mentioned, we're seeking to amend the various acts which govern the sector in terms of our 10-year cycle of review. The two acts there we're referring to is the Nuclear Energy Act and the National Nuclear Regulate Act. The safeguards, compliance and inspection audits, which we conduct on a regular basis, and also we're seeking funding provisions for the radioactive waste management in terms of the fund goal. Highlights for the period, I think I've touched on most of these. The establishment of the National Nuclear Energy Executive Coordination Committee, sorry for the spelling here. It will be headed by the Deputy President. It is headed by the Deputy President as the authority for decision-making and monitoring and ensuring general oversight of the nuclear expansion program. And in May 2011, South Africa also hosted the International Atomic Energy Agency Second Regional Conference on Energy and Nuclear Power right here in Cape Town, close to the waterfront. This is to further exchanges and interactions amongst members of the African continent. There were 140 plus delegates at the event, of which we had representation of at least 12 countries in Africa interested in nuclear power. In April 2011, we also participated in the review meeting of the Convention on Nuclear Safety, which deals with the safe management of radioactive material. This also culminated since the Fukushima event in the ministerial conference post-Fukushima, which took place also in the financial year 2011-12. And we also undertook the necessary stress tests as referred to at Kuburg and Safari Research Reactor in Pelindaba, close to Pretoria. And we are busy in this financial year looking at implementation or recommendations emanating out of that stress test. We also initiated the IAEA self-assessment review, the Integrated Nuclear Infrastructure Review, which looks at the 19 milestones of ensuring readiness for nuclear build. As said, yeah, the review will be completed during this financial year. It's conducted in accordance with the IAEA's milestones approach, and it considers a wide range of issues such as legislation, funding provisions, radioactive waste management, grid infrastructure, to name a few. We also continue consultations on the appropriate radiation detection equipment at ports of entry. It's a multi-stakeholder project involving international and national stakeholders and the border control posts, such as other authorities such as South African Revenue Services, etc. When this project is completed, South Africa will be able to prevent illicit trafficking of nuclear materials through the ports of entry. The National Radioactive Waste Disposal Institute business case was approved. It now remains to physically establish the Radioactive Waste Disposal Institute once funding is provided for. Performance against targets. I think I take this as read, but I'll just go through it quickly. The approved nuclear program relative to the IRP, baseline is clearly indicated. The baseline is basically what we had in place prior to the financial year and what we achieved in the financial year, the actual achievement. The fuel cycle infrastructure, like I've said, we've completed the pre-feasibility studies. We've also found that through the pre-feasibility study that this project is not critical at present. It's more critical to get some clear guide on the nuclear program in terms of the procurement, and then we can start with the launching of the nuclear fuel cycle infrastructure. The establishment of the Radioactive Waste Disposal Institute, we've got the approved business plan and budget plan needed to establish the institute. At the port of entry, there were most of it, as you can see, what was required, the target was not achieved. The main challenge being the consultation process with the various stakeholders and bringing all of it together. There has been some challenges in terms of buy-in, but we are working on that through a much more informed consultative process. The National Nuclear Regulator Act Amendment also not achieved. This was rescheduled or extended, including the Nuclear Energy Act, due to the upcoming nuclear program, and we would include it as part of the NEC squared or NEEC decision-making process. The Radioactive Waste Institute, the draft fund bill was not approved by CANET. In fact, we are still busy with the fund bill, so that target is not achieved. And the safeguards function, which is currently sitting at NECSA, the South African Nuclear Energy Corporation, is currently in the process of being moved. This was not achieved. The number of authorizations processed in the year, we've achieved that target of 100 authorizations. And for inspections, compliance, inspections, audits, and investigations, we've achieved that target. The participation in international forums of non-proliferation nuclear suppliers group and the Zanga Committee, including the Pelindaba Treaty, partially achieved. The Pelindaba Treaty is still in the process of being implemented through the AFCO, the African Commission on Nuclear Energy, which is being established by Department of International Relations and Coordination in this financial year. The community outreach events, there were supposed to be three. Only one event was completed, so this target is partially achieved due to funding constraints. As for those which were not achieved, mainly the challenges we faced were in terms of human capacity. We have a structure of 66 for the nuclear program, as envisaged in the nuclear energy policy. However, due to the gradual unrolling, we cannot commit to fill this complete structure. We are sitting with 23 of the 66, which will eventually be filled as the program unrolls. That also translates to financial resource constraints, and in order to match commitments with resources, is what we seek to achieve in this financial year. The way forward, we continue preparatory work for the nuclear rollout. We continue to implement the phased decision-making approach as agreed by the NEC squared, or National Nuclear Energy Executive Coordination Committee. we complete the IAEA integrated nuclear infrastructure review in this financial year. We implement communication and stakeholder engagement more vigorously. The legislation, amendments of legislation are also being pursued. We're also pursuing the allocation of human and financial resources. We plan to operationalize the National Radioactive Waste Disposal Institute in this financial year through the establishment of the board and to ratify the Convention on Physical Protection of Nuclear Material, or at least prepare the work to ratify this by September 2013. Thank you very much. Thank you, Chair. Thank you.
Our first friend, Dr. Banas, with the IMAC.
Thank you, Chair. Just in terms of this, I'm going to be very quick, if you allow me. I'm going to skip some of the slides, just in terms of time, and I think some of the issues have been dealt with. But before starting, if you allow me, just to because there's some facts and figures being reflected in the presentation. Remember, it's for the financial year 11-12. Just now, with the release of the census statistics, we get a lot of questions around why your figures is this and why is that SA figures different. So just in terms of that, I just need to put some background to it before I get there in this presentation, and that's why I want to skip some of the slides. The one issue is that you'll find that it indicates that we currently have 14.5 million households being identified in 2011. And of those, around about 1.2 million is regarded as informal settlements, 1.3 million informal settlements, and around about 1.2 million backyard dwellers and informal households in those proclaimed those. So that is the background in terms of what is at stake. So if we didn't look at these figures, then it will make much better sense. This, I think, is to understand how the process is working. It's two main players. It is ESCOM and municipalities. In terms of the various outcomes that INAP is involved in, it's been listed there. I think it's important that although we're talking about 11-12, because up to September this year, the total number of households that have been electrified through this program stands at 5.5, just over 5.5 million. And as a matter of fact, in a couple of days' time, the President will also then launch the 5.5 million connection in Warrington, Northern Cape, to celebrate this unique delivery of the service. By the way, that's one of the largest electrification programs in the world. There is not any other electrification program in the world that delivers this number of figures. I know that Brazilians is chasing us, but they have started later than us. This graph just gives an indication of what is the achievement over the last couple of years. There's a tendency of going down, I just two things I want to mention about this graph. The one is the reason for this going, the decrease in number of connections. And then on the right-hand side is three pillars with red figures in there, and we'll deal with those two. The reason for going the decrease is mostly due to the fact that we moved into the more rural areas with electrification, the cost per connection is much higher. Secondly, as we progress from 2004-05 with the electrification program, a lot of the times, as part of the electrification program, we had to also build new infrastructure. So it means that you spend a lot of cost of your allocation to build infrastructure, and then it's less on connections. And then thirdly, is that the cost of hardware have increased dramatically in the last couple of years, due to the fact that our base metal prices have increased dramatically. So that is some of the reasons for those decrease. But I also need to tell how we're going to turn this around. And we're really busy doing that. The three pillars on the right-hand side, which is indicating red, is the three current years of projects that's not fully complete. So it means those figures will still increase. So what we have there is not a final for that year. So that those indicated in black is all closed off. Financial closure it's been reached there. We're still busy with this the last bit of 19. There's literally just a couple of connections that need to come in. And then in 10, 11, there's still another 10,000 that will have to come in. And 11, 12, there's another 45,000 connections still need to come in into the room. Just if you look at 19, why it's slightly lower than the others is that those 2 years, 18 and 19, we spent a lot of money on infrastructure, and we could harvest that connections later. Cheers, left us. But anyway, in terms of the where we are right now, you see the number of households that is without electricity around 3.4 million, 1.2 million informal and 2.2 million informal. You see that 1.2 million is in line with the SA's number of 1.3 million informal households, and that's the number that will have to be electrified. The formal households, 2.2, and you will find that the majority, 75% of these backlogs, are actually in Eskom supply areas, mostly deep rural and informal areas. That's a backlog per province in the country right now. If we didn't look at the focus areas and just some reflection on 11, 12, please take note that in discussing these overarching figures, that we actually need to take cognizance of the fact that your municipalities financial year is different than our national financial year, so there are always a little bit of lag in terms of their figures. Now if you look at what is 11-12 delivery up till now for measured as in end of September, and I just to mention to the committee that these figures are audited figures, so they are, we know there are some connections out there, but they haven't been audited. And before you haven't audited, we can't bring them into this table. So for municipalities, that's the amount, 1.1 billion rounds that's been allocated for connections. 48,000 have been achieved. And as I said, there's another 45,000 roundabout that need to come in. Eskom has got 1.7 billion, of which 116+ thousand connections have been achieved, the non-grid amount and 10,000. So if you look at the total number of connections due to the allocation of 2011-12 stands at nearly 165,000, and I see there's some more to come. If you look at a specific breakdown per province, these are the allocations in the second column per province, and then the planned connections per province, and then total, and this is for the Eskom areas in the respective provinces, which is around 99,000 connections, of which they actually have delivered 116,000. There's still around 4,000 that tell us will come in, so they'll push it up to 120,000, so they overshoot their target, they will eventually buy 20,000, apologies. If we compare it with the municipalities, the same thing, the amount of capital being allocated for respective provinces, then also the allocated connections as been seen, we contracted for this 1.1 billion rands to the municipalities, around 100,000 connections. We only got at this point 49. We believe we get still 45,000, that's 45,000 coming in, which still outstanding will come in. That will push our delivery in for 11-12 to a level of 110,000. Now the target of what we have been allocated funds for is 190,000, so we will exceed that by 20,000. And the reason for that is that we are starting to tighten the screws on the respective entities, municipalities and ESCOM, and we squeeze out a bit more efficiency out of the process. I'll deal with that a bit later. There's also the figures for the non-grid. And these are the slides. I just want to quickly go through terms of challenges. I think I dealt with some of it already. I think what's more important, we all know these challenges, but how are we going to get around these challenges? I think that's the most important aspect. As you remember, in March this year, we held what we called the electrification in Dava and Durban, and a number of the members of this committee have attended that in Dava, and we're so thankful for that. And if you recall, part of that in Dava was to spell out the problems and also indicate where to go to from there. And we indicated that we will have a stakeholder engagement and then also to work out a process to improve the electrification program. And the reason for that is, if you can recall, is that at the current rate, we're not going to reach universal access. With 3.4 million households up not having electricity, we deliver around about 210,000 connections. The growth rate in households, remember, it's not formal and informal, is in the 220,000 to 250,000 households. So we're actually chasing the runaway bus. So hence we had to sit down and say, how are we going to improve this? And the first one that we said is that we have to go back to basics. And that's what we did the last couple of months. I can assure you that the department work around the clock with our stakeholders, including Eskom. Eskom allowed us to climb into the machine room. And it's interesting how much we squeezed out of that. For this year, which is 12:30, we're going to get around about 25,000 to 6,000 more connections out than we contracted to them. Because of the fact that we're closer to the fire, closer to see how they do it, and that way to say, but if you get closer to how they do the breakdowns, how they do the implementation, you can say, well, let's sharpen the pencil here. And with that, we got a bit more out of it. So that is the first thing. But it's also, that's good that we will, instead of 199,000 connections, we'll probably, what we have now on the table, we'll squeeze out 225,000 to 230,000 connections, which we're very proud of, and we're working hard on that. But it's still not enough. So how are we going to do that? The first bit, after the heading, the new integration roadmap, which we alluded to in the education dialogue. In this plan, we modeled and we sit together with all the role players, and eventually we come up with the following resolutions. The one is to say that education is not only referred to a direct connection. We will have to extensively make use of much more non-grid options. But we have currently 50,000 examples of non-grid connections. There's some good results coming out of it, but there's also some stuff that we need to look at and improve. The one is that the quality of service and level of service is not what we expect it to be. So if we can move away and more into a non-grid, then we'll have to up the size of this non-grid. So at least that the household can not only use it for black and white TV, radio and some lights and charging of some cell phones and radio, but also to increase it to the level where there's more lights, which is outside lights is very important. Then also a color TV, you know, flat screen televisions, the electricity consumption has decreased dramatically, and also fridge. So that's a basic level that we want to increase it to. And with that, and we modeled it, and also showed some results just now, we can then ensure that we will increase our numbers dramatically. There's another factor, and that's this whole issue about the Electrification National Master Plan. You know, I think like any big project, if you want to succeed, you need to have a plan. Now, up till now we have had a plan. The plan is basically to say there's 600,000 connections to be made in Eastern Cape instance. And then try to build around that how we're going to do it. But constantly it's moving. Then you know, we get more pressure from this area than this area. And we sit down and say the only way we can solve this, we need to have a universal plan for country. It's now driving from here, Cape Town, Joburg, different routes. You go over Kimberley and go via Bloemfontein. But if there's 3-4 backseat drivers and each one shouting which direction you're going to go, your driving time from here to Joburg is going to be a vastly increased, and that's basically the current situation you're sitting with. And we're going to keep with one plan, and we're going to get a lot of wood from different directions. But in keeping with the plan, we're going to decrease the number of years to get universal access. So that one we hearted with, and that's something that we need to finalize by mid next year. So I just share that information with the committee. And also, if you remember, I promised that when the plan is finished, I'll come and share it, and just basically share it at a very high level. If you want to, we can come back and do a much more deeper synopsis of what we're doing. I think also important is efficiency. We for the next 18 months to 2 years, we still squeeze a couple of efficiencies in terms of number of connections out of the system, but then we'll reach the bottom of it. We can just squeeze efficiency up to a certain level. But that will give us that little edge of increasing, we hopefully, to the level of 50,000 more connections of the allocation that's been made to us. Remember our allocation increased roundabout to a CPI, so if we can increase that beyond what CPI has given us, then I think we can be proud. Then also we need to do it holistically. It's not only an INAP, it's not a DOE program, it's going to be a national program. So we have started to talk to the various other entities to assist us. The municipalities, we have now constant meetings with the, especially the metros, that they can come and join us in assisting the smaller municipalities that are struggling. Then MISA, and then also DBSA has come to the multi-force systems. But I think also in terms of efficiency is one thing, but we also have to think about adding some additional funding. So we might promise to National Treasury, if we improve efficiency, we want to see them also coming to the party to increase our funding. So there are indications, we have started to talk with them, especially under the PICC, the SIPS programs, there's some indication that additional funding will come to INAP to address some of the huge bottlenecks, and that will give us that little edge to move quicker. With all of that being said, we can, at 2025, have universal access, that each household has access to electricity. The breakdown of it, and the next item, I must apologize, is a bit busy, but I'll just quickly try to explain what's happened. This is one of the model that we used. If you look at the bottom, it says mix 1, mix 2, mix 3. Those up to mix 6 is different options of access to electricity. Mix 1 is every house in Africa is access to grid. Up to mix 6, we have a combination of grid, mini grids, hybrid systems. And the one that we opt for after running these models forward and backwards, I think when we have 18 years of data, we fixed it to model which is called mix 3. And then if you see the layers on the left-hand side said base case, meaning that we keep our funding as is, we increase efficiency. Then the next layer is add 1 billion to the original allocated funding, and then 2 billion. If we look at mix 3, at the bottom it says 78. That means 78% of all the connections, 78% of all connections will be allocated for grid, and the rest for non-grid. Built into this is also a grid supply to informal households. As you could recall, up till now we haven't formally funded informal households for electrification. We are going to do it now, but only where it's a safe application. So that being said, you can see it's an option of different technologies and different funding. You can play around which year you want to pick. So we can do it in year 2020, or even earlier, to 2018. But it all depends on the technology and the funding that will come our way. So we developed this to say it's options, you know. We can believe under the base case scenario we can finish this off by 2023. The next slide I skip because it's just this fixing that. To end off by saying that as we said, we make a commitment here that for a current allocation for 12-13 and for 13-14, we will deliver more than what is expected because of efficiencies, but after we will have to look at a bit more on funding coming our way. Thank you very much.
Anything more, Dicky, you want to add or something?
No, thank you, Chair. I think I would seek your guidance here. I know we've got quite a list of questions that honourable members asked at the previous presentation, so I'm not exactly sure what I would like us to deal with first, those questions, or would you like us to like to members to proceed, ask more questions, and then deal with all of them totality?
Well, I think we should allow members to ask questions on this one, and then deal with all the questions, the answering of all the questions in totality. Honourable members, it is now over to you. Honourable Nambi, Honourable Sinclair, Honourable Abels, in that order. Just before you, Honourable Nambi, welcome Honourable Colin Lane, It's quite a privilege to have you, an honor to have you in our committee. We really feel honored and blessed to have you.
Agreed.
Thank you, Chair. Let me welcome the presentation. Welcome my colleague, Honorable Maine. I'm happy how the department is dealing with the presentation to us, especially in the past we used to always emphasize the issue of being representing the interests of provinces. So I must say, DG, I find that to be very interesting that we are no longer wasting time dealing with that question, because it's very key in terms of specifics, and we can be able to relate to what is being presented as per our own provinces that we are representing as members of the National Council of Provinces. Chairperson, the last presentation, I am more interested in Dr. dealing with the issue of the percentage in your graph. If you can try to simplify it for us to have a better understanding. I'll try to be a little practical. For the whole of last week, we're in Northern Cape, in our program, taking Parliament to the people, and looking at the challenges there and checking the graph there, and comparatively speaking to the few provinces that we have visited, the one that I'm coming from, Mpumalanga, I'm tempted to say, with my understanding of percentages, I might be wrong. It's not reflecting the reality of the practical situation of Northern Cape. But clarify it for me to have a better understanding. The second one is the same to Doctor. Your slide 107 and 109 when dealing with universal access, no consistency in terms of the numbers there. And the other one that is linked to that, because in your slide 107, to be specific, you're talking about 2025, but in 109 you're talking about 2023. But linked to that, even though we might not use the current results by census, I find it very interesting here, because you are even able to say from to date to 2023, we're left with 11 years, and I'm breaking it down to say if for the next 11 years, in each year, we are going to be trying this number of houses, it means we are going to be able to reach your target. But if you can check, I'm posing this question to say, how is the current numbers, because the current numbers that we're having have got bearing on what is being projected here, because it's changing altogether the ball game, because if you have considered that, it's plus in all the provinces, except maybe one, you are adding a number of households. So how is that going to have bearing in what we are trying to achieve in that particular year that we are projecting here? Then the other one, DG, it's saying you were in the last financial year, you were able just to reach 72% of the total plan targets. Maybe to try to clarify that one so that we can have a better understanding. Program 4, the nuclear one, you introduced the person who was going to do the presentation as somebody acting, if I got it correct. And from the very same report that we are dealing with, it is highlighted that employees acting in a higher vacant post for an interrupted period exceeding 12 months in contravention of the very same public service regulation is arising in the department. Deal with that. The last question from my part in this round, Chairperson, because I've got a list of them, but it will be unfair to ask all of them, is we always talk about this PFMA and go to strategic planning, state of the nation address, saying we have to pay these people who are providing service in 30 days. But DG, it is clear that we are not always, we are struggling to adhere to that, and President has said it's something that will no longer be negotiable. So if you can try to make us to maybe understand your frustrations, what is the problem? Is it because of the acting? What is the problem? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Egbert.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Yes, Mr. Nami has covered quite a bunch of what I wanted to say. Thank you, Mr. Nami. I just wanted to know on the last, I think it was second last presentation of the informal areas that will be electrified, if perhaps later we could have a breakdown of how many were done for each province. Thank you.
Honourable Sinclair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yeah, Chairperson, this is naturally a follow-up on our previous meeting, so I raised a number of questions. Unfortunately, my documents is in Pretoria. My documents are in Pretoria, so I can't remember exactly what I asked there. Oh, okay. Well, the question.
No, he's only joking. He was supposed to be in Pretoria, and he earlier told me left it on Mazumu's table in Pretoria. So I don't know.
Thank you, DJ. Yeah, I was waiting so long in Pretoria, I was thinking I was becoming a blue bull there, Jay, but, yeah, Chairperson, but just to refresh the officials and specifically the DGs, the DGs,
the questions.
Yeah, I'm not going to raise them, but just the one or two principles that I raised, so, DG, in terms of your annual report, you know, everything looks very fine and everything is very nice and so on. But the one thing is when it becomes too clinical, you know, then start raising questions and so on. So the one issue that I raised the previous time is what I call the postbox syndrome, where your department is becoming a postbox. So where your department is becoming nothing more than a postbox, all that you do is you transfer 100% of the money that you receive to the different entities. Now, in terms of that, for us as members of parliament doing our oversight role, it's fine to know that you transferred 100%, but what happened with that 100% of money that you transferred in that specific entity? And you know that. Then the second issue, Gigi, that I had issue with was the issue about ESCOM and still being the elephant in the room. And I think being critical about the government and the department is the one thing is we can't get the elephant out of the room. That is the reality. ESCOM continuously remains the big brother and dictate agendas and so on. And we must do something, because if we want to achieve all these wonderful objectives, even in terms of the INAP and so on, we need to address that. Which then brings me to the issue, firstly, about the nuclear, which was raised this morning. You know, I was quite amazed last week to read somewhere on the internet that ESCOM is now going to run South African nuclear program. That was announced last week. Now, we want to diversify, we want to bring in new role players in the industry and so on. What is the department's viewpoint on that specific issue about ESCOM going to run the nuclear energy program? Yeah. And then, Chairperson, the second issue is you know, my pet hobby in the Northern Cape, the hobby that I call the solar park in Upington. Now, I know there's different variations on that. I hear there's now a solar park in Brika and all that and that and the other. The other day in the House, I asked the Minister a question, specifically regarding the solar park in Upington. And the Minister then said, I mustn't go and make stories where there's no stories. But I walk around there. Yesterday I was in Upington. And the story still remains that the solar park in Abington has got the potential to be one of the big job creators. The minister once responded to a question to say that there will be 14,000 jobs created. I question that with all objectivity. But what is the situation with the solar park in Abington? Because there's a lot of expectations, there's a lot of work being done, but it seems to me
the outside perspective, seems to me that there's some political undertones derailing that whole thing. So maybe the teacher can assist with that one and give some perspective on that. Yeah. Then coming back then to the issue about the nuclear, there's also, as you would well know, a nuclear waste site, foul pits in Namakwaland. And can I just say, Chair, I honestly believe that our committee at some stage must visit that facility. Because I maintain that if we use that facility right in the broader context of nuclear energy in the world, it can be one of the assets of our country. But we must manage it right, naturally, in terms of the necessary specifications and so on and so forth. So what is the department's vision on foul pits in the future, now that we're going to first start rolling out our internal program, but also using some of the nuclear waste to enhance the income base of our country and also the province to a great extent. Yeah, Chair, and then also related to the nuclear presentation, I don't want to be a spokesperson for Honourable Van Linden, but you know, there was a lot of issues raised regarding Tuisvind. We visited Tuisvind, but at some stage, the people up there, the ordinary citizens like us, must know how far and when is this, or let me rather rephrase it, when is this project going to be started? Because it links to the issue, DG, of energy security. We had a relative good year, I think, in terms of energy security and supply. But the critical issue is, if we come out of this economic recession and the economy is going to start boosting again, what is going to happen with energy supply in South Africa? Now, it links to my question about how can we stabilize the grid in terms of providing. To do that, I'm of the opinion, contrary to some of my colleagues, that you must have nuclear energy in the mix. Now, the issue is, when is the contractors going to start building at the spot? Because it seems that that is the preferred second site. Yeah. Then coming to Dr. Barnard's presentation about the INEC. I must just raise one issue about nuclear. There was an indication on slide there that there was inadequate funding to achieve the community outreach events. Now, did you know our constitution is very strong in terms of public consultation and so on? And I honestly believe that there's something that you must look at in terms of engaging communities on that. Because at the end of the day, we can plan, do whatever, but if we don't do that public consultation in terms of the constitution, it will just further delay the process, because that is a crucial element of our constitutional prescription. Yeah, then in terms of Dr. Warner's presentation, on that funding model, in terms of the fiscal, I mean, there's not two, but those concessionaries, who are those concessionaries? Are they IPPs, or who are they? Maybe I must just explain a bit in terms of who are they. Yeah, and Lynche, we were brought under the impression that this whole EDI process is sort of unwinding. But if I look at the presentations, also in terms of Dr. Vanna's presentation, slide 101, the shortcomings in EDI are starting to have a very negative effect on the delivery of new connections. What are those shortcomings? I thought that we sort of finished with the EDI. I know that we have some issues with personnel and so on, but I thought in terms of the principle we were finished with it. And then, Chair, in terms of the challenges, there's a number of them, but the one that I miss, and it's just a practical challenge, is the water quality of South Africa. I don't see a reflection on that. Because as you would recall that, you know, if you use the solar geysers, part of the challenge at the moment is that the water quality, specifically regarding the lime content, is creating serious challenges. So, yeah, so thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honourable Sinclair. You know, I've also got a couple of questions, but I think if we just stick to one for the interest of time, let me lead by example and stick to one. Dr. Barnard, I know the last time when you briefed the committee, you said there were talks going on in terms of the Anglo-Pacific Development Bank of South Africa, the DBSA. We've been on oversight in the Northern Cape last week and taking our program element to the people. And we've had municipalities complaining that they have to take from the budget, operating budget, to fund the INA programs, and they wait quite some time for the money from Department of Energy to receive their money back. How far have you come with negotiations in terms of the Development Bank of repaying such monies, or the Development Bank first pay the monies and then you repay the Development Bank back at a later stage? The other thing is the target of the 1 million solar water heater geysers that were that was launched, I think, 2 years ago. Was it 2 years ago? 2009, 3 years ago, yeah. But what's the target? How far are we? Where are we at this moment? That's right. Sorry, I said I'll stick to one, but it's not two. And, okay, let me stick with that two then. Over to you, DJ, the team.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think I will try and also deal with some of the issues that were raised. Chairperson, some of the questions I am going to be requesting the team to assist. From Honourable Nambi's questions, I will ask Dr. Barnard to ask the questions, to respond to some of those questions. But let me respond on the issue of nuclear with the person acting. Chairperson, the person who is in that position at the moment is actually away on a sabbatical. She is going to study a master's in nuclear engineering, master's in nuclear law, and that is to make sure that we boost up the skills in that component. Actually, there is a deputy director general in that position, Mr. Mbambo, but he is currently in Russia with Minister Nguan Mashawane. My apologies that I didn't send that apology. And also Mr. Apano, also who is a DDG responsible for policy and planning, he is also in Spain to make some presentations there in terms of our renewable energy program. So the past, obviously 11, 12 is actually the past. In the past, we have noticed that out of the structure that was approved, we were only able to implement only 52%, and hence therefore that's why we were struggling with filling some of those positions because of the funding issues. And from the look of things, the funding issues are still going to be with us for quite some time, taking into consideration what Minister of Finance said about tightening of the belt. So for us to be able to do our work, then again we have to try and make sure that we do some of the work smarter, because as a department we don't believe that we need to employ consultants, because we do some money on the goods and services, but we'd rather at least bring people on contract in the department so that work can be done in-house, so that we can have those skills and also the knowledge kept within the department. And again, on the issue of the payment within 10 days, I must say on this one, we have done better than most departments in this regard, but of course I need to highlight that we had quite a number of challenges with regards to collaborating in some of the projects with municipalities. For example, when Minister does one of those public participation programs, we usually have to do them in conjunction with municipalities. We have been doing the manner that says that the municipality is going to do its procurement processes, through its procurement process, procure service providers, and then we are going to pay those service providers because we thought that is the best way to deal with it. Unfortunately, because of those service providers, they're not in our database and they've not been verified. So you find a situation where as a department, we have now to when we request some of the information, for example, we have had a situation where the service provider has been delisted from Cipro. You find a situation that they don't have a tax clearance certificate. You find the case that when you take them to National Treasury to be verified their banking details, they get thrown out. All those things, they contribute towards pushing the payment date to more than 30 days. So what we have done this year, we have made a decision that from now on we are going to have what we call an agreement with the municipality. So they do all the procurement processes and then we just pay them and then they sort out the service providers in that particular case. And then in the case where we using service providers, we're going to use those that are in our database that have already been cleared. So in order to move away from this problem of payment after more than 30 days. So that has been one of the challenges. But of course, there are certain times when in specific months, in March, I think 2011, March 2012, what happened there was that we didn't have enough money in our account, so most people were paid 1st of April 2012, but that was a unique situation. So that's basically the areas that we are looking at to clean up going into the future. So that really has been a bit of a challenge, and definitely we do agree that it is just criminal not to pay people within 30 days, because the majority of these people that we deal with is usually SMEs, so who actually do need this cash flow. So it is our intention that we are going to clear this up going into the future, because in June, I think our service providers were not paid at that particular point in time. We're actually less than three, but we'd like to prefer that figure to be zero. So I will ask Dr. Barnard to deal with the issue that were raised about figures not adding up.
Thank you, Chair and DG. Thank you. Just a sort of question on Northern Cape and the figures not telling up. 2, 3 things around Northern Cape. The one is the issue in Northern Cape is that your figures is low, the backlogs are relatively low in terms of the bigger picture of the country. But the challenge is you're sitting with 100-year and 1,000-day spread over the biggest province in the country, which make it difficult on one hand, because currently it's around 50,000 backlog in the Northern Cape. I might be a couple of thousand up or down now. But if it was like this in the urbanized area, you can kill it very quickly, but it's spread out to various areas. And what happens is those areas is normally situated very far from your grid network. So you have to build a specific line to that. And you will see this a lot in Springbok and outside of Prieska. I mean, a lot of networks to ensure that we can bring electricity to those areas. But secondly, also, it's a challenging area in terms of your delivery physically on the ground. You can't just plant a pole like in a normal environment. You have to, in some places, you have to shoot with dynamite for each pole. And I just want to use the opportunity also, Chair, remember last time Honourable Sinclair asked a question about Colesberg, what is the project's there? And I will come back to that now, but there's a classic example where we allocated 7,700 rands per connection, and they couldn't do it. That they come back, we increased to 10,000, and an extra 2,500 to 2,800 rands was just to plant in the poles.
you can't get in there because of the terrain itself. So it is small, but we are working hard to get that done. The third issue is that we are also considering now the option of addressing a couple of provinces where we could just cleaning it out. That disappears from our main radar screen. And Northern Cape is one of them. There is also the Free State, the small numbers which you can address. So basically looking at that, and it's also been built into the model. We can address it in that way. The second question, the issue about the difference in the years, the 2023 and 2025. Yes, it's correct. There is a difference. The reason for that is very simple. One is the financial year where we're going to allocate the funds in until the year we're going to finish it. So 2023 is the one which we're going to receive our last funding. So we need to have a target also for National Treasury. So that's where 2023 comes from. But the implementation will be completed by 2025. So that's the difference. So there's no difference in the model. It's just in terms of, that's why we've seen that graph. It indicates 2023 because that's the financial part. By the way, if you talk about universal access, it's also something that, what's the definition of universal access? You can never reach universal access because there's always a growth happening. You plan a certain way, and then you around your back, there's another couple of houses come. But universal access throughout the world, and we discussed that with various entities in the world, the World Bank, IFC, other countries that are dealing with it, it's normally referred to as something between 85 and 89% is regarded as universal access, because the other is rolling that you will catch up. The issue that was raised is, how is this breakdown per year to catch up with the growth? Yes, we have built it into the model. As I mentioned earlier, we're sitting with 18 years of data. We're working very close with Stats SA. Next week, a meeting with them, we'll get the raw data from them, because what we received now is the high-level data. But how we work it is normally your growth average. We can identify per area what is average growth in households for Gauteng urbanized areas, Gauteng very urbanized, Free State urbanized areas, Free State rural or Northern Cape rural, which is the growth there is 0.01%. It's very low growth. So we build that into the model so you can know it's not exactly but close by what will be the projection next 10 to 11 years of growth in those areas. We also built into it, there's some growth going to take place in some parts that's higher than normal, like your north-west province, the mineral belt, where there will be huge growth. So you build that 5-10% growth into the, so that is all built into the model, Chair. Thanks. And then Honourable Abram's question on the informal households per province. I don't have it with me, but I can just mention that the figures as follows. For Gauteng, for instance, I think, which is your province, it's around about 60% of all informal households in Gauteng. The other 40% is spread between the other provinces. If I remember correctly, around about 15% is in KZN. Western Cape is also around about the same figure. And that's around about right, and the other 5% spread about the rest of the country. But the majority is in Gauteng in terms of the informal settlements.
Okay, then if I can maybe just go to Honourable Sinclair, I will start with the questions that you asked today. On the issue of asking Eskom to be an owner-operator, what we are asking there, what we had asked Cabinet to approve was that we need an anchor, okay, for the nuclear program. And somebody who's going to do all the number crunching at various models that needs to be looked into. Now, it does not necessarily mean that Eskom is going to be the only entity that is going to be involved, but because they are going to be looking on behalf of the state, what are the permutations that we need to have. Of course, they will be guided by the nuclear energy task team. So basically the plan there is to be able to say, when you look at Eskom's balance sheet, how much can they be able to take how much will they be able to take with their current balance sheet, and therefore what is the rest, what is going to be done by the in the private sector participation. So the nuclear program, Eskom cannot do it alone. We simply just want
somebody who is going to be able to do the work and make sure that we know exactly what is contained into the program so that we can be able to advise the Deputy President appropriately. That way then we are able, then we create the certainty, but it does not necessarily mean that ESCOM only is going to be running the nuclear program. ESCOM will never be able to run it all by itself. So that was basically where we were coming from. But also, as you are aware, ESCOM at the moment is a monopoly. It does generation, it does transmission, it does distribution. So even if, say, we were to bring in a private sector, they will still need to service to the grid. Until such time we finalize the legislation, therefore we need then to provide that certainty to the private sector that somebody will buy our nuclear power. So that's basically where we were coming from in terms of that. So later on, once the legislation has been finalized, which includes the independent system and market operator, then we probably are going to be allocated some of the private sector programs into that entity. That's basically where we were coming from. With the issue of the solar park, the intention with the solar park is that it's going to be a belt that will include, amongst others, Accrington and Prisca as one of those areas that needs to be looked into. At this point in time, we are struggling to secure the land in Upington, because the piece of land that was earmarked for the solar park an option was given to another company, and it was deemed that it's going to be a little bit dangerous for the state to go and do EIAs and geological surveys in a piece of land that were in which somebody else got an option for that land. So hence, therefore, that's why in terms of that belt, then moved into Prisca to start moving the project, because we didn't want issues of land at Upington to undermine the whole project, because the family believed that Northern Cape is still the best place for the solar park, and we just need to try and resolve the issues around the land. We have engaged a number of lawyers in this particular regard, and I can assure you, lawyers have been paid a lot of money to try and resolve that matter with Upington. But of course, we'll probably have to make sure eventually that we try to resolve it. Hence, therefore, we're saying Northern Cape is extremely important for a solar park. Let's proceed with it, and then we can take it from there. And then, in terms of Falpas, I definitely fully agree with you. It is an asset. And the idea here is that when the National Radioactive Waste Management Institute is established, it's one of the areas that it needs to manage. It's one of the areas that it needs to concentrate on. In fact, we would like to see Falpas where we're going to be getting most of the nuclear specialists. In fact, what we're planning to do in future as a department, whenever we get bursaries, people from Falpas will be given the first right of refusal around that particular area. So we firmly believe that it's going to be quite important. We are having a lot of discussions with ANRA, which is a radioactive waste management institution in France, and we are learning quite a lot on how can we make sure that areas around where there is a nuclear waste disposal are empowered, and they get better, they always give in for preference when it comes to looking into that. And on the issue of statement, maybe I will ask Dutesh maybe to answer that one. When we start, and then the issue around the energy security, and to make sure that we stabilize the grid. And then on the issue of funding for the consultations, Honourable Member, that was last year. Now we have allocated some money for consultation, because it's going to be quite important, because it's our constant view that we need to be able to consult around the issue of nuclear energy, but also just to inform people quite regularly in that particular case. And then I'll also ask Dr. Barnard to deal with the fact of who are the concessionaires. And then coming to the EDI issues, honourable members, when we refer, I suppose, you know, sometimes in these sectors we end up using with and then without explaining ourselves. when we're talking about EDI, we're talking about the electricity distribution industry. So in other words, we're talking about the industry as a whole. So that will include municipalities and ESCOM. So technically, we'll be referring to the power distribution from what we call 132 kilovolts downwards. So that simply means then in the area where you and I as customers will get our supply. So that is called an electricity distribution industry. Now, what we had electricity distribution industry holdings, which was EDI Holdings, which was a company that was tasked with making sure that we consolidate this industry. And that didn't work out, and that was dismantled. So that is something different. So that is the company. So on a number of occasions, we'll always refer to the EDI because we mean now the electricity distribution industry, not to the company. The company was EDI Holdings, and it's over. So that is separate. So when he is saying that the shortcomings within the EDI, it simply means that the problems that we have around maintenance of the distribution of infrastructure are beginning to manifest themselves into the expansion of the electrification program. Because if the supply or it's not strong enough, you are not going to be able to connect people. Or if you do connect people, they are going to see electricity power failures almost every day. So you need to strengthen and also maintain the infrastructure and rehabilitate the infrastructure to be able to connect more electricity customers at the end of the day. So basically that is what we are referring to when we say EDI is in a shortcoming that beginning to manifest themselves in the electrification program. So basically what was the maintenance problem of the infrastructure is now beginning to be an electrification problem. And in terms of the issues of water quality, we'd like to deal with that. Okay. So also, having said that, maybe I can also deal with the questions, Chair, that Honorable Sinclair had asked the previous time about the departments being the host box. What we had to engage Treasury on this one, although we definitely agree with you, we prefer not to be a postbox. So what we have agreed with Treasury is that we need to have program management capability in the department, which is being headed by Dr. Barnard. So basically what we are saying is that we simply not can just take the money. We are not just responsible for transferring money, but we're also responsible for the outcomes from their money. And that is basically what is the function of the department. And therefore, that's why you need to go and land in ESCOM's machine room and make sure that in some cases where municipalities are struggling, because they're struggling with achieving of their objectives or achieving their targets, that's when we need to get involved. In fact, that's one of the reasons why, by the way, Honorable Chairperson, they sometimes are not paid on time, is because we want them to provide us reports. Not only provide us with reports indicating they have done what they need to do. We also need evidence because at the end of the day, we need to be able to, we are accountable for this money. So we are just not giving it to them as a blank check. So we need to be able to be sure that whatever they said they're going to do with the money, they must do it. So that if they're unable to do what they said they're going to do with that money, let's give it to the municipality probably next door who can do it within the same province, because that we try to do. We try and make sure that if they're unable to achieve what they need to achieve, then they can give it to the municipality in the next province. So that's where the challenges are, and that's where we have to get involved. And then the elephant. Obviously, I'm sure and Honorable Sinclair is aware that we signed the first IPPs last week. But with regards to the issue of ESCOM and their perceived bully tactics, what we're saying is that we have to make sure that we have more IPPs. In fact, just to indicate, the minister has indicated that soon we're going to be issuing another proposal
or rather another call for proposals from IPPs for 2,500 megawatts of coal, 2,652 megawatts of gas power from IPPs, 2,609 megawatts of power from hydro power, and also that will also include the regional projects. And also she indicated that 3,200 megawatts of power that will include, among others, solar, biomass, biogas, landfills and hydro. She also indicated that we are going to need 800 megawatts from the sugar industry, which we are going to be targeting mainly KZN and Mpumalanga in that regard, because when it comes to the solar power and biomass and wind power, they were unable to have projects from that particular area. So that's why we are going to target those two provinces, and then of course the natural gas. So basically 474 megawatts of natural gas. So there is definitely a move to make sure that we have as many IPPs as possible. In fact, I think the call for proposal is going to happen in the next 6 months. And then, of course, we are looking at legislation, the independent system and market operator that is going to be mediator between ESCOM and the IPPs. And then in terms of probably if you can deal with the issue of solar water heating with specific focus on, I think it's Umzibongo municipalities. Yes, you can do that. And also the Honourable Chairperson's question about the 1 million solar water heating target.
Thank you, Honourable Jay. To answer some of Honourable Sinclair's questions, I just want to take the opportunity to also deal with something else on the Falbert, and it's an advertisement actually, so sorry for using this space. The Minister of Energy is going to Falbert on Friday, the 23rd of November, as part of our outreach campaign for the area. We will be bringing members of the community and talking to them about nuclear, so that could answer two questions on community outreach. Thank you. Coming back to Facebook, the question asked was when is it going to be started? The timelines, according to the IRP, construction would start around about 2016-2017. I know this is the age of instant gratification, but like with all good things, sometimes good things take time. Nuclear power plants have a lifetime of 6 years, more than any power plants, and it takes a lot of planning and development. We're still waiting for the record of decision pending ESCOM submission for the Facebook site. So we don't want to, as government, I think at the higher level, preempt a decision to be made by the Department of Environmental Affairs pending the submission of that environmental impact assessment report. And once that is granted, it takes about 3 to 4 years to obtain a license. During the licensing phase, the owner-operator can start with the reconstruction work, basically preparation of the ground, etc. And like I said, construction, real construction, or as we call it, first concrete, 2016-2017, and the reactor will end operation 5 to 6 years later, which is 2023-24 timeline, according to the IRP. Just on an interesting note, we all heard of the fires that recently ravaged the area, causing considerable damage. There's a big anti-resistance movement in the area, as you all know, but I think we also need to bear in mind that with the advent of nuclear power in the area, there will be advanced firefighting equipment, etc., deployed. So there's a communal benefit, and I think we need to bring this to the community of the area as well, to say that with technological development in the area, there could be benefits as well. Not only looking at the negative parts of nuclear power. Our intention is to go to Facebook after Falbert with the minister to speak to the community there. Thank you very much. I hope I've answered the questions.
Chair, there's two or three that is left on my website. Just to allude to what the DG has mentioned on the department as in postbox, just take note that in the 11-12 financial year, INAF have re-gazetted 280 million rands in the middle of that financial year, where we saw where municipalities haven't performed, took the money, reallocated to other municipalities, hence why we also increased our efficiency on that. So it's we're not operating really as a post box, we're really intimately inside.
And by way, Chairperson, if I can indicate, is that when we take the money, it's usually with the consent of the offending municipality.
Thanks for that. It's not a harsh. Normally there's a bit of words, but we done it through a formal agreement. In terms of the question from Sinclair on the concessionaires, thanks for that. Normally we just skim over it. And if you allow me, I'm just going to take a step or two back. When we started the solar systems, the PV systems, nobody was interested in it. Nobody of the utilities. And the utilities didn't want to assist us in terms of saying, we're willing to take that into our basket of service delivery. Eskom, definitely not. So you had to come up with something different. So the idea was to use concessionaires, which used quite throughout the world for off-grid or non-grid supplies. So we started off by indicating three provinces in the country where we identified it will work, because it's areas where it's far from the grid, you know, for a couple of years grid would reach there. And secondly, it then means that it was private entities that come into filling that utility role. So concession is a different word in this case for utility. So we established in 2002-2003, after advertisement, six concessionaires, of which one stopped after 2 years. And then there's five left, still five going, of which three is operating very, very well. Two is just barely, barely running. And the provinces they're operating is Eastern Cape, KZN, and Limpopo. Limpopo have one concessionaire, in KZN there's three, and in Eastern Cape there's also three, of which one is also operating from KZN side. So what it means is that, and the reason for concessionaires is that you can't just let the company moves in and it's not financially viable just to have a couple of customers in town A and then a couple in town B. You can't run a utility that way. So we have to allocate a couple of districts to a concessionaire. So it means there's a couple of districts, and we said in those districts we will allow non-grid to be implemented as agreement between us as BOE, the municipality, and if Eskom supply area, then also with them. But in the spirit, definitely, because there's three basic electricity subsidies involved, the Eastern municipality must be engaged in it. So up till now, we did over 50,000 of these connections. In the new dispensation, meaning the new way we're going to do electrification, we will move away from this way of doing it. We're still not exactly sure about the financial modeling. Just to give you an indication, right now those concessionaires are running as a private business. They get a subsidy of around about 70-80% of the hardware, but they, in the signs the contract with us, need to be the maintainers of the systems for the next 10 years. In that, they are allowed to get a monthly flat rate that's been paid to them for the maintenance of the system. Up to now, it's working well. We have 8 years of experience, but they're struggling. That means that they don't, the tariff increases that's been allocated, they're not falling into that room. So the new dispensation, they need to be fully loaded utilities, and there will be new ways of allowing them to come in, and that will be made known early next year. We're busy with the finalization of the model, the financial as well as the operational model for that. So we'll come back to this committee also, Chair, to share with you that, but right now we don't have the detail, but it will be different from what it is now. The next one that I just want to then address, if I may, is then the question from you, Chair, in terms of the BSA and then the budget operations, that budgets have been taken from municipality itself to finance electrification. It's correct. The way the allocations are working for municipalities that we remember the electrification program is not 100% a grant. It's a subsidy. People tend to forget it's a subsidy. So if you see that for municipalities, it's between, it depends on which type of connections, it's between 100% and 80% that it receives in terms of this subsidy. But they need to top up. But remember, the tariffs that municipalities are being allowed to charge from NERSA is around about 30 to even higher, I don't even use the figure, from what the ESCOM increases are. So that allowance for NERSA, for that extra on top tariffs for municipalities, is to manage the electricity network as well as for expansion. Expansion is including electrification. So that's why I needed a top up. I do need to mention that we do get sometimes, some municipalities even now, it's very clever. They go out and do electrification themselves out of their own pocket. And then the moment they close to finish, they come to us, there's already 20 or 30 or 100 connections. Can you fund it for us? And that's for us very, very easy because we know it's underground. And then we have the books that we can check. And we like that. So we're doing a lot of this. The DBSA issue, unfortunately, the municipalities can do two ways of making use of DBSA. The one is that they go straight to DBSA and then borrow money for expansion. What the agreement we had with DBSA signed earlier this year is that they set aside 2.8 billion rands for electrification programs. But we target all the big backlogs, the Malas of this world and Kandlas, where there's 38,000 backlogs in that municipality. And there's rather about 5 municipalities now been identified where this allocation of what we call soft loans or front loading of DBSA is coming in. With these huge projects where we know that it's going to take us 3 to 4 financial cycles to fund that. Then DSA come in, they fund that for the municipality with a guarantee from our side that we will pay that money to the municipality which they then use to pay back. So what advantage this is, where project normally will take 4 years to complete, they can do now 2 years, knowing the funds will come. So it's for all parties, it's beneficiary. So that's for the DBSA parties, it's only for big projects. They can do on their own, can borrow money from DBSA, but we're not coming in at that level right now. We just do the 100 million and so forth projects. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, G. Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. I will go through the questions as provided by Honourable Sinclair, and then I will later respond to the one for Honourable Chair. Now, the first question refers to the insufficiency of the budget to complete installations in Umsobomvu local municipality. Now, with regards to the availability of the funds, the department allocated about 20 million for the municipality to install about 2,000 solar water heaters to the indigent household as per the municipality's indigent list. Now, the idea was, because the municipality, they indicated that they do suffer issues like the water quality, as Honorable Sinclair alluded to earlier on, as well as the security of water supply. The department then had to take some cautionary approach and not commit all the resources, financial resources in particular, to the project, because the municipality currently has got about close to 6,000 households, and about 4,000 of those are the indigent. So we then agreed with the municipality that for the first phase, about 2,000